Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Would You Date a Scientist? I'm your host, Wendy Gannon, and I am joined this week by Siley from Sykes Holiday Cottages, who has just been promoted to Data Science Manager. How are you doing, Siley?
Hi, Wendy. I'm very well, and thank you. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. The sun's gone, which is a shame, but yes, come back quickly. I do like to ask twice because I know that there's a lot of pressure at the moment. So actually, how have you been?
So all this pandemic, I mean, since this pandemic started, I mean, this pandemic time has been really tough for me. During pandemic, I lost my grandma.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then I lost my uncle. And at one point, even my dad was hospitalized and he was in intensive care unit for a week. So I guess this pandemic has taught me that not to take anything for granted ever again.
Absolutely.
And I guess I appreciate little things in the life now.
Oh, bless you. Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear that. It's been really horrible. Were they at home when you were over here? So was it a lot tougher for you?
Oh, yeah. And back then, I mean, India was in red list and I mean, travel situation was very chaotic.
It was awful. Like, My friend Rabina was in a similar situation. So I can, it's really horrible. So I'm sorry to hear that. So to move on from that, sorry, what's your favorite piece of tech ever, Siley?
So I guess I've always used Apple products and most of the times I like the fact that Apple is a very, like, it's like a big ecosystem.
Yeah.
So once you start Apple gadgets, then you get drawn into that world. So it's very difficult to resist that temptation. So I guess I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, I think Apple should sponsor this podcast because the amount of people that say I'm going to reach out and ask if they'd like to sponsor us. Yeah, I've said it before. I am a recent convert to Apple in the last year, 18 months, I guess. And I've got everything now. I wanted an iPhone when they first came out, but I wasn't allowed. I had to have Android. And, you know, I loved Android and I'm an avid user and I love the OnePlus phones. But yeah, I am so happy that I changed. Just as an aside, everybody, I have locked my dog out of the kitchen that I'm recording in today, and he might be scratching at the door. So if you can hear that in the background, I'm really sorry, but it was either that or him biting me throughout the episode. It's nearly walk time. So, Siley, talk me through your career. How did you get into data science and what have you been doing?
So my data science career, it roughly started around 8 years back when it was the time when I started at Manchester University. So my course, I mean, actually it was really funny because I initially planned on studying computer security, but during induction week, I attended some of the courses and modules and back then it wasn't even called data science. It was called something like modeling and visualization of high dimensional data.
not as snappy, is it?
Yeah, not snappy as it is now. So actually during the induction week, I quickly realized this is what I enjoy doing. And I definitely wanted to do that. And the good thing is I got this fully funded scholarship by Chevening Scholarship by UK government. And that was really good because I kind of, that's the reason I studied at Manchester University. So, I mean, when I graduated, the most important challenge for scholars is that they kind of go back to home country and contribute to the home economy. So when I went back to India, that time was even more challenging because, I mean, data science was not even the concept back then. And 7 to 8 years back when I was trying to look for my first data science opportunity, it was very challenging at that time. So that's when I found out that there is a local startup who is actually doing some great work in AI and tech. So I just wanted to know what they're doing. So after my first conversation with CEO, I quickly realized they are actually doing data science, but they're just not calling it data science.
Right.
So that's when they offered me this quantitative analyst position. And I was like, I'm happy to join. Can you please change my job title to data scientist by any chance? So I guess back then, the CEO of Algo Analytics, he happily accepted my request. And And after that, it was really great because then all senior members also requested him that, can you please also change our job title?
I love
So it was all of us together then working as a bunch of data scientists working together. And soon it was really very big team. So I guess that was the beginning of my data science career. And since then, I've never looked back. I've worked at in the different industry, ranging from startup to mid-size to big organizations. And I mean, the way I started, it was like associate data scientist, senior lead, and then the progression. So it's been a fabulous journey so far. And I really appreciate and I'm very passionate about what I do. So I enjoy every bit of it.
So a few things. Firstly, congratulations on your promotion that you've just received. Very good to hear that. Congratulations on the scholarship. That must have been, how many people get that scholarship?
It's a global scholarship. And according to the ratio, every year 30 to 40,000 people applied. I don't know what is the stats now.
Yeah.
But roughly 4 to 5% people make it.
Wow. That's really good going. Congratulations. And you mentioned that you've worked in startup, medium size and bigger size companies. What do you prefer?
So there is no preference, really. I enjoy the process and there are different types of problem statements everywhere you go. And what I enjoyed the most is every industry I worked at, there were different set of challenges and different types of problem statements. So as a data scientist, it's very important to get that all-rounder experience and try to understand how, if you think about it, there are two parts really. Being skilled as a data scientist, you then need to acquire the data skills so that you can actually drive those insights from the data. But there is this another story that how you can actually get that value out of the data so that you can help the business. So driving value from that data is another story, and maintaining that trade-off is the key, I guess. And that's what I learned when I worked at all these industries, and that helped me to be a better data scientist.
Great. So would you say that you're more of a generalist data scientist?
I never thought about it that
way. you could be quite niche both in what you do within data science, NLP, for example, and also the sectors that you work in and the size of the company, I suppose. So you've been doing all of it. That's really interesting. Are there any sectors that you prefer? Or is it data's data, problems are problems and they're different and it's just good to find different solutions?
Yeah, and there is that. But I guess most of my career, I've worked with retail industry. So the good thing about retail industry is that if you look at the speed in which the data is generated and the diversity, it's vast. And there are so many things you can do with that sector. So I guess retail is very exciting. That was the first sector when I started working as a data scientist. So that was really exciting. Because of that, I could work on various problem statements.
Yeah, definitely. And what are you doing at Sykes Holiday Cottages?
So at Sykes, we are part of the centralized data analytics team. And there are mainly three disciplines: engineering, analytics, and data science. So, there are around 40 members who are part of this team.
And brilliant.
Yeah. And most of importantly, if I have to say that our structure is more like a pyramid kind of structure, with the bottom one, like the engineering one, middle one, analytics, and the top one is definitely data science. So, it's very cross-functional and centralized team. So depending on the problem statements, we keep pairing analysts with engineers with, and that's how I can say that it's truly central and cross-functional team. And I'm very happy to be part of this team.
Brilliant. We usually talk about diversity later, but I'm going to jump in now, seeing as we're kind of on the subject of it. How have you found diversity in your data science career?
So 5 out of 6 places I worked, it was almost like 50-50%. But
brilliant.
And just once, it wasn't so good. And that's when I realized the bias in the industry, that it exists. And that was eye-opener for me. So, I only have one piece of advice for women in tech: that be so skilled that your CV won't be overlooked. And as a woman living in the 21st century, I can say that when I think of, we don't really think about men in the data or men in the tech community, because this idea totally seems insane, because we don't have communities like that. And the fact that we are still talking about it, I mean, I just hope that our future generations find this idea of having women in data community so insane that, I mean, I just hope by the time that women will be well established in this tech world, and I'm just hoping for the best.
Absolutely. That's good that you've only had one company where it was not 50-50. That's really good to see. Okay, so as you know, this podcast is for people who are looking to get into data science, either through pivoting in the career that they're in now or going through academia like you did yourself. Do you think it's important for somebody to have a master's degree?
No, not really. One don't need to have a master's degree, but at the same time, I can totally understand with many people who are trying to make it in the field now, and they might find it difficult that the competition is fierce, and they might consider those options, which is the right thing to do, I guess. But even if they do, I'll suggest that instead of focusing on top-ranked universities, focus on the course structure better and try to find the course where there is more emphasis on practical data science, where they can teach students that how to deploy models in production, because
that's brilliant.
Because most of the times what happens is we all are taught to how to create better models. And I mean, most of the times focus is on achieving that 90% accuracy and making better models. But if you can't put those in productions, no one is going to use it. So, I mean, it's very important that how your models are being used in the real world. And that's the real skill, I guess.
Absolutely. So I didn't go to, I did open university when I was a lot younger, but not having to go through choosing a university, I wouldn't know that to look at the course. And I think I would have looked at the good university first, where they are in, you know, in the stats, rather than what the course is teaching you. That's really good information. Thank you for that. What about somebody who wants to pivot into data science? Have you got any tips for people that are looking to do that?
So I guess it's not a new thing, because I mean, no one is born as a data scientist.
And right.
This isn't even a first career choice. It's a new field, and I guess anyone can be a data scientist. It's just about passion about the field, and if they love what they're doing, if they love to play with the data and driving these insights, understanding algorithms and how to make better models, this all process is so exciting. And I mean, there are two parts really. One is theoretical part and one is practical world. And I guess having that right trade-off is very important. So I guess statisticians or people who have mathematical background, for them, good thing will be to master those software engineering skills and understand how to write a better object-oriented code. And at the same time, I guess challenge for software engineers is to master those statistical and machine learning techniques. But I'll say that anyone who is trying to make it in the field, get your hands dirty, try as many things as you can. If you hear about some technique, just find that data set and try to implement that technique, so that you'll that will help you to understand how that technique is actually working. And there is no other way. There is no shortcut. You need to try many things. I mean, one cannot be true data scientist if they don't want to try these stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not about trying things and getting them right, especially in data science. It's trying things and getting them wrong. Right?
Wrong all the time. It's just that you keep trying.
Yeah, keep trying. Work out you know, even if you get something wrong, you could have figured out an answer to another problem. So definitely keep trying.
And the other thing I would like to tell everyone, I mean, that do not underestimate the power of networking and mentorship. So give back to the community, but at the same time, no matter whichever stage you are at in your career, make sure that you have mentors to guide you through the process. And I mean, if you ask me, I would not have reached where I am without the support from all the mentors I've had in the past. And thankfully I've had at every stage of my life. So I'm really thankful for that. And I'll say that I'm counting on that all the time.
Oh, bless you. Me too. Absolutely. Yep. So I have career coaches. I've got a business coach. I've had mentors my whole life. What would be a good way for somebody to reach out and get a mentor?
So actually, this is the thing. These mentors are all around us all the time. It's just that the way we are looking at things. So, I mean, when I first started, I mean, during my engineering college, my professors were my mentor. They guided me through the process. Then when I came here at Manchester, I mean, then my professor here at Manchester University, John Brooke, he guided me all throughout my life. I mean, throughout the career process, and still till the date he's in touch with me. And he keeps giving me all those good advices. And it's not that, I mean, every place I work, it's not like just because you switch so many companies, but every place I worked, I had a mentor and they all guided me through the process. So I'll say that I have more than one mentor, and it's the reason. I mean, you don't really need to think that mentors are different figures. They are sure. Around you. They can be your parents. They can be your partner. I mean, they're everywhere. You don't need to.
You're right. And I hadn't thought of that. So it's not necessarily just somebody with the title, you know, can you be my mentor? They're exactly. Always there supporting you, giving you advice, giving you ideas. Thank
and
you.
And sometimes they're your friends. Sometimes they're your friends.
Yeah.
So it's like they're everywhere. Just go out, ask for support, and there will be people who are willing to help you out, and count on their help, I'll say.
I mean, people love to help people, right? It makes people feel good. It certainly does with me. It makes me feel great that I can help somebody. And people also love to tell you if they're good at something, they would definitely like to share that knowledge. You know, people like to talk about themselves and what they know. So, yeah, quite right. Quite right. So who do you look up to in data science? Is there anybody specific apart from the professor?
So actually, if I'll start naming everyone, it's really small, but when I first started at Algo, there were I had two mentors, I mean Ankur and Sangram, and then when I came here at Manchester Airport Group, Gareth and Chris, they both mentored me, and they actually introduced me to the working in the UK culture and everything. So they kind of guided me through all this process. So, I mean,
it's massively different, right?
Yeah, it's massively different. And I mean, you cannot expect certain things. So it was really different for me, and that cultural shift and everything. So I'm just thinking about so that I won't miss out anyone in the process, but there are just so many people. I've been very blessed. And, even today at Sykes, Bob is mentoring me all the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There are people I can count on. And I guess at different stages of my career, I've had different mentors. So when I was working on my Chevening scholarship application, I had help from Prashant Suryavanshi. He helped me during that time and mentor me. When I was working on my exceptional talent visa application, I had a help from Mukesh Advaryu and Malarkar. So they both gave me very good advice at the time of when I was working on the application. When I was working at GS Lab, Srinath, actually, I was their first and sole data scientist. So Srinath mentored me that time and helped me to get to the process where I'm the only data scientist in the organization. So like I said before, I've had multiple mentors in different stages of my career. That's why I recommend everyone to have mentors.
Yeah, wonderful. So what do you think data science is going to look like in the future?
So I guess data technology is changing all the time, and so are the data problems and the way we are approaching them. So there are traditional problems and there are new sets of problems. So I'll say that we are heading in the different direction now than 8 years back, but we are definitely heading in that full stack data science corner. So I guess there will be more industry who will be expecting people to be more skilled and with various technology stack and with more having that kind of knowledge, who knows from start to end kind of process and that sort of thing. So I guess we are going in that direction of being full stack data scientist, I guess.
Sure. Especially if you're going to be starting in a startup or a smaller company, you're going to be needing to understand both the business end to end data science. I guess if you're in a bigger company with a larger team, the role's going to be broken down more, isn't it, into doing specific tasks rather than the whole end-to-end thing. That's definitely something for our listeners to think about. What's the favourite project you've ever done? It doesn't have to be work-related. It could be from studying. It could just be for fun.
Actually, all my projects have been super special to me.
I love that. I love you. You're brilliant. Just your outlook. You're just so perfect.
Every problem is different, and that's what makes it challenging. But there is this one specific problem where I was working at Manchester Airport Group, and what happened in the first 3 months, I couldn't find solution to that problem. I mean, I was just thinking about how to crack that problem, but in the end, it turned out that we actually needed to approach it in a different way rather than just approaching problem in the data science or using the traditional data science method. So most of the times as a data scientist, we are compelled to use data science techniques we learned so that we can solve that problem. But the learning, I guess, was that you don't always need to use that kind of data science solutions to solve every problem. So in the end, I kind of decided to solve it in a different manner, but that was a very different learning for me because that's the one problem I did differently.
I bet it was really satisfying to have solved that problem after so long.
Yeah. It was very, very satisfying. And at the same time, I mean, it was also very valuable piece of information for business because it helped us to reduce operational cost and everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the end, we also wanted to apply for other airports. So it was very helpful.
Brilliant. Lovely. Are there any sectors in data science that you wouldn't work in?
I guess I don't think there is any sector which I'll say that I won't work in, because at the end of the day, there are data problems and there is the data, and every sector have their own challenges and different problem statements. So if you are saying that I won't work in this field, you're potentially denying that on that opportunity that you'll miss out on something. So I'll say don't do that.
Okay, fair enough. I like that answer. Okay, so what do you think? We spoke about you being a generalist. What is your favorite part of data science? You're going to say everything, aren't you? Have you got anything specific that you like doing?
So I guess over the time, I've realized one thing. I mean, when I first started out in the field, my ambition was to try every different type of use case.
Yeah.
But later on, I realized that it's really important to understand business challenges and then translating into data problems. So I guess I love that challenge. And I guess that's the beauty of working in data domain, that you can actually think about all these problems and then you can then find that business opportunity and challenge which you can turn into data problem. That's my favorite part, I'll say.
Yeah, that's got, you have to be quite creative, don't you, to be able to do that? Yeah, work, yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I do. I just don't think I could. Last week we were talking about becoming a data scientist and what you need to have, and it was creativity and then working out how to do things. I was like, well, I definitely haven't got the brain for that. Which is a shame. I guess I'm in the right job then, right?
You're mentoring people, you're coaching, and you're making all the difference in everyone else's life. And I guess that's a great thing, Wendy. I really appreciate that.
Of you. Right. So let's go back to diversity. Okay. How can we make it more diverse? How, not just for gender, you know, for race, disability, genders, anything. How do you think we could make it better for everybody to get more people involved within the data science?
I think we need to work on creating awareness about what data science really is. I mean, it has become more like a buzzword, and some people who hear it for first time, I mean, people have a number of thoughts and they might think that this is something which isn't for me. So I guess there is a need of promoting field in a manner which people can understand what it is about. I mean, if you ask me, sometimes I even find it difficult to explain to my mom that what I'm really working on.
Sure.
So exactly. So the thing is, if we can create that kind of awareness and help people understand what it's really about, so we can actually help people. I mean, and there is this other side too. Some people, they're just excited to work in the field because it sounds really good.
Sexy.
So there's two sides of the coin. So I guess by creating that kind of awareness, we are helping people to understand what the field is really about. So they don't get into field for wrong reason. They will be passionate enough to follow their passion. And I guess that will definitely, I mean, I'm just trying to address the root cause here. I mean,
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. So I think you're right. There is two sides of the coin. One of them, we need it to be, I guess, I don't want to say less masculine, but I'm just going to use that as an example. We need it to be less masculine so that people who are not masculine feel okay to apply. I am just using that as an example. But then also we don't want people to apply just because it's the sexiest job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So get into the job for right reasons. And the thing is, I can say that I'm talking about my generation now. I don't want to sound so this, but I always see many women in data science. It's not like there are no women. I mean, in my first job, there were 7 women data scientists and 7 men data scientists. So the proportion wasn't, I mean, we are not talking about small team here. And I can tell you that there were many data scientists around me all the time. It never really occurred to me that there is this bias in data science. And I'm telling you, 5 out of 6 places never happened. Just
that's, absolutely brilliant. You know, it's really strange how it changes company to company or person to person, because some people I've spoken to, some women I've spoken to, have said that it's been like they've been the only data scientist in the big female data scientist in the big team. I spoke to a chap who said that there were no female data scientists in their team. I think it depends how you approach the hiring process, and as you say, how you present data science as a whole.
And actually, the one time when it happened, when I said it was eye-opener for me, because that was because I was discussing the same thing with my colleague, and she said, you know what, all of the female data scientists in the team, they actually came through program, either program or something like that. You are the only one who actually interviewed for the job.
Okay.
And so that time it got me thinking that, I mean, why this shouldn't be the case. And
yeah. No, it shouldn't be the case. And I think, look, I don't think it's necessarily the company's faults as well. I keep going back to what you said. It's the lack of awareness. And I think a lot of people who identify as women are scared, not necessarily scared, but have imposter syndrome, don't think they can necessarily do it.
Imposter syndrome is really key thing here. So what I've seen is in data science is very, I mean, it's multidisciplinary field. There are just so many things to learn. So most of the times anyone who is new to the field, I mean, they are trying to understand and master all the tools and technology. And it is easy to feel lost because it takes time to actually get hold on and get a grasp of those skills, and it comes with practice, but at first it can be intimidating. So some people, even if they are doing good, they can end up thinking that I don't know this, I don't know that. So it can go in many directions, I'll say, but that's the thing that I guess many data scientists also have, imposter syndrome. And yeah. I'm also guilty of having that. At time to time, I also question my own judgments and everything. And there is that self-doubt, but we need to learn how to get over it. So
100%. Yeah. I posted on LinkedIn today that, you know, because the hiring market has changed so much, there are leaders within the tech industry that are having imposter syndrome because they don't know how the market's changed. They don't know how to navigate that hiring. So they're staying in their jobs that they are, they're staying in their jobs that they're not happy in. They're either overworked, underpaid, or they don't like it because they don't think that they have the skills or they're good enough to go for these other roles. Which definitely can. Like, come and like message me. I will help you. There's definitely a way to it. I had imposter syndrome. And then I worked for a company and I realized that actually I'm really good at what I do. So I started my own business and look at me now, you know, 18 months later. It's quite often once you get over that imposter syndrome, it opens the door for you to do anything you want. And you just need to believe in yourself. So let's work on your mindset.
That's well put. And I guess that's the key here. I mean, everyone needs to learn that. And there is this hidden strength in all of us. And we need to believe in that.
Yeah. And no, it's always going to be there. And having a little bit of doubt's natural. It's normal. And it's going to help you to succeed, right? But if it's unhealthy and it's stopping you from living your life, yeah, then definitely need to sort it out. That's brilliant. So on the diversity bias theme, how can we ensure that the models and algorithms and AI is all unbiased or as unbiased as possible?
This is an interesting question. We can do it in three ways. First of all, choose a representative training data. Make sure that there's a balanced proportion of classes. Sorry if I'm being too technical. But the second is choose the right learning model for your problems. And the third one is no companies or data scientists are knowingly creating those biased models. Yeah. It's just that, I mean, these discriminatory models, they are probably working as per expectations in constrained environment. It's just that we need to test it in the real world. I mean, we need to monitor the performance using real world data. So once we start doing that, I guess this way we can definitely reduce that bias.
Yeah, I think it helps to have a very diverse team, you know, we were just talking about, because like you only know what you know. The final question is, there are billionaires in this world they shouldn't be billionaires in this world. Do you think that some of them or one of them could build a super evil villain? Like, I don't know. I watched Superman not far from home, the one with the metaverse, just multiverse, yesterday, and all of the old Spider-Man villains came back. So it got me thinking about it even more. So what if somebody in a lab with loads and loads of money built or made a supervillain? How are we going to stop it? How are we going to punish them? And do you think it's going to be an actual thing?
Very interesting questions, I would say. So I guess this is not a new thing for us humans to think about this, because I guess it was, are you any chance, but are you a fan of Marvel movies?
100%, yes. Usually in my office, there's a cardboard cutout of Paul Rudd. I always have my notes up when I'm talking to people. And I'm going to read the original question. And this is why I have trouble remembering what it is, because it says, what will the punishment be if Elon Musk builds an evil Ant-Man and takes over the world? So that's why.
It's very specific. That's very specific.
So I have to kind of make it more general.
Well, actually, when I always think about Elon Musk, I think about Tony Stark. So Tony Stark actually created Ultron. Not just Tony Stark. Tony Stark and Bruce. They together created Ultron and he went rogue. So superheroes kind of had a really tough time handling him. But I guess in the end, they kind of got situation under control. So the thing is, I mean, I always think that even if you are in that kind of situation, I guess in the end, even if things go south, we will figure out the way of getting it under control. And in the end, we will find a way to save humanity, I guess.
We have to. Come on, Elon. Let's be good about this. It's all right. He's got Twitter now. It's fine. He's busy doing other things. Siley, thank you so much. Is there anything that you'd like to plug or talk about before we leave?
Yeah. So I guess about the other thing, supervillain thing, I guess in the real world, data scientists, they keep testing their models. They keep evaluating their models thoroughly. So I guess chances of that happening are very, very minimum. I'm saying minimal because non-existent, because I'm not going to say that it is not going to happen ever. No one can predict things like that.
Not even a data scientist.
So even if they do, I believe that there are still very many good best data scientists in the world. Together, we can come up together and solve something. I mean, this challenge, answer to this challenging situation. We need to be superheroes saving the world then.
You are the Avengers.
Yeah, we need to be Avengers then.
Yes.
And on the other side, I'll say that at SciX, we are restructuring now, and we are we are looking forward to hire one more data scientist. So we are working on challenging problem statements. And if anyone is interested, feel free to apply. And we are happy to join you and welcome you in very friendly data science team.
Wonderful. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Are you happy to have people who are pivoting, who haven't got real world data science knowledge, like people who are listening to this podcast?
So we are looking for people with little bit experience.
Okay.
And the thing is, I'm not saying that you need to have a master's, but if you can demonstrate that you have created, or I mean, you have made an open source contribution, and you understand the algorithms and the tech, and you have very good programming knowledge.
Yeah,
that should be very sufficient to actually land any data scientist job, not just at SciX. But those are three key pointers, I'll say.
So get onto GitHub, make sure your GitHub is up to date with all of your projects that you've done, show you're working, get some open source stuff, get a project that you're passionate about, work on that, get it out there, and make sure that that link is on your CV.
Yeah, and not just that. I mean, when you're, most of the times there are many tutorials available online. So one major mistake people do is they kind of just go and copy paste the content. I mean, copy pasting the code isn't the best way of learning things. I mean, try to understand why you are actually taking that approach, and just try to find justification for why you have selected that approach and why not the approach B. So once you start spending time in that direction, you truly understand the hidden concepts, and then you know that why you are doing certain things, and then you can stand your ground. And I guess that's the main thing.
Perfect. Right. Thank you, Siley. It was really lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, Wendy, and I hope to catch up with you soon, and take care.